Earth's sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, a daytime moon and two planets for sky watchers. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Look through the telescope and see Jupiter's four largest moons, its own moons, the Galilean satellites, which move continually in orbit around Jupiter and are constantly changing their position with respect to each other and with respect to the planet. So that's a very cool thing to see.
You're listening to Skywatcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
Hurricane Isaac made landfall along the coast of southeast Louisiana, just southwest of the mouth of the Mississippi River. Flooding is a major concern along the Gulf Coast. Storm surge could exceed 10 feet across Louisiana and Mississippi. At the time of this recording, at least 29 deaths are to be blamed by Isaac. Visit redcross.org if you'd like to make a donation to help provide critical supplies and services to families and individuals in need.
NASA's Mars rover Curiosity hit the road towards its first destination on Mars, a place called Glen Ulk, on Tuesday, August 28th. That day was Sol 22 for Curiosity, its 22nd Martian day. As it began moving eastward toward Glen Ulk, it left tracks on the Martian surface. See some of the amazing pictures that Curiosity has taken at earthsky.org.
The benefits of breast milk have long been appreciated, but now scientists at Duke University Medical Center have described a unique property that makes mother's milk better than infant formula in protecting infants from infections and illnesses. The findings explain how breast milk, but not infant formula, fosters colonies of microbiotic flora in a newborn's intestinal tract that aid nutrient absorption and immune system development. The findings were published in the August issue of the journal Current Nutrition and Food Science.
According to researchers at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, extreme summer temperatures are already occurring more frequently in the United States and could become normal by mid-century. Climate models project that previously rare summer temperatures will occur in well more than 50% of summers by mid-century throughout the lower 48 states. That's our news of the week. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. This week's Song of the Week is by Marmalakes. They're currently out on tour, so catch them if you can. This song is called Septimus Warren Smith.
Septimus Warren Smith left me with the scattered bits who knew what the scraps can do. Whistle with me, oh, why won't you? And laugh at the baffling state of the new. The deaf lady in the laundry room still made out my mouth made her. So constantly in ing, from memory I am swimming. I don't carry a camera, I've got eyes. Pedal, step, pedal, I pocket the prize. Eyes. Septimus Warren Smith
showed me the significance of space
between mouth and page. Well, whistle with me, why won't you now? Now, now, and relay the mouth. Way of wow, wow. You can look for a reason if you sing while you're seeking,
singing,
seeking,
seeing.
There's no etiquette needed, just shape and to breathe. It is you. It is here. here. Hope the graveyard attendees will whistle while they carry me.
Find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at EarthSky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, and this week it's all about the moon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. Okay, so we had the blue moon, which nowadays is defined as the second full moon of a calendar month. And let me say that not everyone in the world had their blue moon in the month of August 2012. There are a few people on Earth who are going to have it in September. And those people are in New Zealand, in eastern Russia, places that are kind of close to the international dateline. For them, the time of full moon comes on September 1st, so they will have another full moon on September 30th, and they will have their blue moon in the month of September.
Awesome. So, just to clarify, was the moon actually blue?
No. The moon isn't blue in color very often. In fact, the phrase once in a blue moon to mean something rare, does apply when you're talking about a moon that's blue in color, because that can only happen when there are certain sized dust particles or, air molecules. Smoke can make it happen, but that just doesn't happen too often. So I've never seen a blue-colored moon, and I've actually don't know anyone who's ever told me they have seen a blue-colored moon.
It is fun to look out at that full moon. To me, it kind of has a slightly bluish hue to it, but it's not the color blue.
Hey, don't confuse me, Jorge.
So what else about the moon? The moon is has a lot of news for us. What's happening with the moon?
Well, the moon is always great because we can all see it all around the globe. And this week, we're going to have a moon that's very visible in the daytime. And so the moon is after full, and the time to look for the daytime moon is going to be right after sunrise. Look in the western sky, and you'll see this beautiful waning gibbous moon in the west after the sun comes up, maybe when you're driving to work this week.
Yeah, it's amazing to see anything besides the sun during the day like that. So can anybody on Earth see this daytime moon?
Right. We all see the moon at the same phase at the same time, more or less. There are some little differences around the globe as you go from time zone to time zone, but the phase of the moon is the same for all of us. So what's going to be happening in the coming week is that the moon is going to be waning. And that means that it's going to be, as it always does, rising later and later at night. When it's a full moon, it rises when the sun sets. But in the days after full moon, the moon rises later, 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 every day about, 30 to 50 minutes later around this time of year. And it'll also be waning in phase, getting smaller and smaller in our sky. So around the end of this coming week, the morning of September 7th in particular, you're going to want to start watching for the moon in the pre-dawn sky. Or if you're up late, you can also watch for it after midnight, because then the moon is going to be close to the planet Jupiter in the sky after midnight. So Jupiter's coming up around the middle of the night now, which kind of blows my mind when I think about it, because we've been watching Jupiter and Venus in the pre-dawn sky over these past months. Jupiter has now, separated, very clearly separated on the sky's dome from Venus, and it's coming up much, much earlier than Venus. Venus isn't coming up until, the hours before sunrise. Jupiter's coming up now in the middle of the night. So starting around September 7th, you're going to see that that waning moon right next to Jupiter. So September 7th, 8th, 9th, you'll notice the moon near Jupiter either late at night or early in the morning before the sun comes up. And then the moon is going to continue to wane around September 10th. You're going to see the moon, a really cool scene in the pre-dawn sky. You're going to see the moon right between Venus and Jupiter. So it's a great time. This coming week is a great time to watch the moon either in the daytime sky or getting up, you know, early in the morning and seeing the moon in the pre-dawn sky, or staying up late and seeing it after midnight. But one place you won't see the moon is the evening sky. So people will be asking us, where's the moon?
Yeah, this is a great time to maybe pull out the telescope from the closet and take a look at Jupiter. It'll be near the moon.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very cool to look at it on the morning of the 7th, 8th, 9th, near the moon. It's also going to be really cool just to look at Jupiter with a telescope over the coming months, because Jupiter's going to be rising earlier and earlier. And between now and the end of the year, Earth is going to pass between Jupiter and the sun. So Jupiter's going to be at its closest to us. And it's a great time to get that dust off the telescope and look through the telescope and see Jupiter's four largest moons, its own moons, the Galilean satellites, which move continually in orbit around Jupiter and are constantly changing their position with respect to each other and with respect to the planet. So that's a very cool thing to see. In fact, you can see that with binoculars, and we always recommend binoculars for beginning stargazers because they're just so much easier to use than a telescope and cheaper.
And it's also a great time this week to take a kid out during the day, and they can catch something as well. They can see that moon during the day.
Yeah, they can see the moon. A child could see the moon in the morning. And in fact, that morning moon is sometimes called the children's moon, you know, with the idea being that children can't stay up at night to see the moon. So the moon visible during the day is the children's moon.
The moon has a lot this week for sky watchers.
It does.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science.
That was Ocote Soul Sounds with Agua Santa. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. By August 1st, 2012, the extent of Arctic sea ice seemed to be heading toward a new record low.
The sea ice extent was already below levels recorded on the same date in 2007. That's the year that currently holds the record for the least Arctic sea ice in September. Sea ice minimum, when there's the least amount of floating ice in the Arctic, comes in September each year, before colder weather begins freezing the ice again.
Then in early August, an unusually large, long-lasting, and powerful storm pushed through the Arctic. Summer storms in the Arctic tend to be weaker than storms that batter the region in the winter, but this one was big. NASA scientists said they've seen 8 storms of similar strength in August over the past 34 years of satellite records.
On average, Arctic cyclones last about 40 hours. This storm lasted more than 5 days. Satellite images taken after the storm showed that it contributed to ice melting in the Arctic. Storms like this one can mix up the ice and make it slushy. Warmer waters may upwell to the surface. And August 2012 satellite images did show large reductions in the extent and concentration of sea ice that could be seen.
So will 2012 beat out 2007 as the year with the least Arctic sea ice? We'll know later in September. For more, come to earthsky.org and search for Arctic Storm. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Tell us where you're from. You can find us as Earth Sky. New evidence shows that billions of rocky planets might orbit the habitable zones around red dwarf stars in our own Milky Way galaxy. That's according to the European Southern Observatory. They made the first direct measurement of the frequency of planets around red dwarfs, which account for 80% of the stars in our galaxy. Here to talk more about these new observations is astronomer Stefan Udry at the University of Geneva in Switzerland. He's part of the European Southern Observatory HARP Science Team, short for High Accuracy Radial Velocity Planet Searcher. Dr. Udry, welcome.
Thank you very much.
What are the main results of your study on planets that orbit red dwarf stars?
Yes, we have a dedicated program searching for exoplanets around these low-mass stars. And we do that with a spectrograph that we have built or that has been built by a consortium led by our institute. And this instrument is the most precise one to measure the velocity of stars. And we detect the planet by seeing a change in the velocity of the star due to the presence of the planet.
Yeah. Tell us more about this. Media reports say that there are likely billions of planets that orbit these red dwarf stars. Tell us more about that.
Okay. The red dwarfs are interesting stars for several reasons. First, they are less massive than the Sun, so it's easier to detect the planet with our technique. That's the first point. The second point is that they are fainter than the Sun. So what we call the habitable zone, the zone with the good temperature for liquid water to exist around the star, is closer to the star than in the case of the Sun. And for us, with our technique of detection, we are more sensitive to planets that are close to their stars. So it's easier to detect habitable planet around low-mass stars, these red dwarfs, than around stars like the Sun. And on top of that, those stars are by far the most numerous one in the galaxy. So we have a sample of such stars, we look for planets, and we are finding that around 10% of them, roughly, they are rocky planets. And as there are 100 billion of those stars in the galaxy, we conclude that there are tens of billions of planets that are rocky around those stars in our galaxy. So we are on our way to detect places like the Earth where life could be developing. So all our work is on a road that at the end will lead us to the detection of life somewhere else in the universe.
You've been listening to astronomer Stefan Udry. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.